Speaking on this program is Brother Winford Claiborne.
There are many distinct advantages in growing up in a large family, as I was privileged to do. You always have someone with whom you can go swimming, play baseball, ride horses, and tell tall tales. But most important, you have a number of people you can blame for your bad behavior. My father would ask me, "Did you leave that gate open so the horses and cows could get out?" "Oh no, Edgar did that." "Are you the one who made all that noise last night?" "No, that was Ethel, or William, or Laura." Our parents generally knew when we were blaming someone else for our misconduct, but that did not keep us from continuing to blame a brother or a sister. The Tennessean, Sunday, August the 1st, 1999, printed an article with the title, "First Lady Links Affairs to Childhood Abuse." Hillary Clinton had vowed not to discuss her husband's affair with Monica Lewinsky or her feelings about his philandering. But in an interview with an English publication, she placed the blame for Bill Clinton's adultery on his childhood abuse. The former First Lady says that Bill was barely 4 years old when he learned of a terrible conflict between his mother and his grandmother. She claims that a psychologist told her that a boy's being in the middle of a conflict between two women is a tragic situation. He is torn between trying to please both women. She attributed Bill Clinton's weakness to the deaths of his father, of his mother, and of Vincent Foster. She defended her husband as a very, very good man, but one who needs to work on his weaknesses. Page 10A. She also blamed the vast right-wing conspiracy for many of his difficulties. Unfortunately, we're not talking about some unknown, uneducated, and unimportant man. Bill Clinton was the President of the United States. There may be evidence that he was abused as a child. It was surely tragic that he lost his father and his mother. It probably was also traumatic when his friend, Vincent Foster, committed suicide. But it is inexcusable when the President of the United States, or his wife, blames others for the President's stupid sexual affairs. He alone was responsible before God and before the American people for the embarrassment he caused his family, his party, and our great nation. How many young people in America have tried, or will try, to excuse their sleazy sexual conduct by telling their parents? President Clinton had affairs with a number of women. If the president can engage in sex outside marriage, what is wrong with my doing it? It surely cannot be all that bad if the president of our country did it, can it? Anyone who thinks that bright young people will not use the president's behavior to excuse their own misconduct has not worked closely with such young people. The practice of blaming others did not originate with Bill Clinton or with other modern leaders or situations. The book of Genesis records the excuses Adam and Eve made when God confronted them with their disobedience and rebellion. When God asked Adam, "Have you eaten of the tree whereof I commanded you that you should not eat?" Adam played the blame game with God. "The woman whom you gave me, she gave me the tree, and I did eat." Genesis 3:11-12. Adam not only blamed Eve for his transgression of God's law, he seems to have blamed God also. He seems to be saying to God, "You are the one who gave the woman to me, so it must be partly your fault. If you had only given me a better woman, this probably would not have happened." The Lord rejected Adam's excuse. He said to the man, "Because you have hearkened unto the voice of your wife, and have eaten of the tree of which I commanded you, saying, you shall not eat of it, cursed is the ground for your sake. In sorrow you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Thorns also and thistles shall it bring forth to you. And you shall eat the herb of the field. In the sweat of your face you shall eat bread, until you return unto the ground. For out of it you were taken, for dust you are, and unto dust you shall return." Genesis 3:17-19. The Lord asked Eve, "What is this that you have done?" She blamed the serpent for seducing her into eating the forbidden fruit. She said to the Lord, "The serpent beguiled me, and I did eat." Her excuse sounds very much like the one Flip Wilson loved to give. "The devil made me do it." Was Eve so naive as to believe God would accept her foolish excuse? God told Eve, "I will greatly multiply your sorrow and your conception. In sorrow you shall bring forth children, and your desire shall be unto your husband, and he shall rule over you." Genesis 3, 13 and 16. It ought to be obvious from this account that God does not accept our excuses for bad behavior or for failing to do our duty. We will have to give an account in the day of judgment for our evil thoughts, words, and deeds. Excuses will not be accepted. Before we examine some of the modern excuses one encounters, I want to take just a few minutes to look at three excuses men gave for not attending a feast they did not want to attend in the first place. In one of his great stories, Jesus tells of a man who had prepared a great feast and had invited many of his friends to attend. He sent his servant to tell those who were invited to the feast, "Come, for all things are now ready." And they all, with one accord, began to make excuses. The first said unto him, "I have bought a piece of ground, and I must needs go and see it. I pray for you to excuse me." And another said, "I have bought 5 yoke of oxen, and I go to prove them. I pray for you to excuse me." And another said, "I have married a wife, and therefore I cannot attend the feast." Luke 14, 16-20. One does not have to be a psychologist or a psychiatrist to know how empty and ridiculous were the excuses of the men who were invited to the feast. Is anyone so foolish as to buy a piece of ground and not fully examine it before the purchase is complete? And why would someone spend good money for oxen that had not been proved? The word "prove" means to try with a view of either approving or disapproving. Would any intelligent man purchase oxen if he had not learned of their abilities and conditions? And why would marrying a wife prevent a man's attending a feast? If we do not want to engage in certain activities or attend an event, we can always find excuses for our behavior. Should we not be honest and forthright when we reject an invitation? We do not have to give reasons for rejecting an invitation, but we ought not to give excuses. Excuses betray us as hypocrites. About 25 years ago, the high school band from Dalton, Georgia, was invited to perform on New Year's Day in the Sugar Bowl at New Orleans. My older son was one of the drummers in the Dalton band. I was one of the chaperones for the band. While in New Orleans, I became very ill with the Korean flu. A very gracious gentleman from Dalton volunteered to give me his plane ticket back to Chattanooga. On the airplane back to Chattanooga, there was another Daltonian who was very, very drunk. The drunk had his car in the parking lot at the Chattanooga airport. When we arrived in Chattanooga, he asked if I would drive his car to Dalton. It was a very cold night, and he persisted in rolling his window down. I would roll it up, and he would roll it down again. He asked me during the drive to Dalton, "Do you want to know why I am drunk?" I was so sick it did not really matter to me, but I knew he was going to tell me anyway. He said, "My preacher has had a serious heart attack. I felt so bad about it that I got drunk." Did you know that any excuse is about as good as any other? If a man wants to get drunk or use other drugs, he can always find an excuse, even if it makes no sense. Israel's first king was named Saul. He was a splendid physical specimen and a man of great ability. He could have and should have gone down in history as the man who led the nation of Israel to greatness. But he was a man of great weakness. He was jealous of David, the man who became the second king of Israel. Saul expended much energy in trying to kill David, even though David had done him no harm and had no intention of doing so. In fact, David had an opportunity to kill Saul, but refused to harm God's anointed. God was concerned about what the Amalekites had done to his people. They laid in wait for the Israelites when the Israelites came out of Egypt. So he commanded Saul and the Israelite army to go down to Amalek and destroy all the Amalekites. 1 Samuel 15:2-3. Saul amassed a mighty army and marched against the Amalekites. Because Saul and the Israelite army were operating according to God's instructions, God gave them a great victory. Saul smote the Amalekites from Havilah to Shur, that is, over against Egypt. They even captured Agag, king of the Amalekites, and utterly destroyed all the people with the edge of the sword. 1 Samuel 15:7-8. But tragically, that is not where the story ends. Saul and the people spared Agag, and the best of the sheep, and of the oxen, and of the fatlings, and of the lambs, and all that was good, and would not utterly destroy them. But everything that was vile and refuse, that they destroyed utterly. 1 Samuel 15:9. God sent the prophet Samuel to confront King Saul. When Samuel met Saul, the king said, "Blessed be you of the Lord. I have performed the commandment of the Lord." Samuel wanted to know the meaning of the bleating of the sheep and the lowing of the oxen. Saul explained, "They have brought them back from the Amalekites. For the people spared the best of the sheep and of the oxen to sacrifice unto the Lord your God, and the rest we have utterly destroyed." 1 Samuel 15:15. Saul blamed the people for his disobedience to God's command. The people spared the best of the sheep and of the oxen. But Saul, who is in charge of the operation? Did not God command you to utterly destroy the Amalekites? Blaming your failure on the people does not reflect favorably on your integrity and on your leadership. You are the one who failed God. Samuel, the great prophet of God, asked King Saul, "Has the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken than the fat of rams. For rebellion is as witchcraft, and stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry. Because you have rejected the word of the Lord, he has also rejected you from being king." 1 Samuel 15:22-23. My friend's excuses did not work for King Saul. Why do we think they will work for us? We may get by when we make excuses to our friends, or to our family members, or to our employers, or even to the police. But we will not get by when we make excuses to the Lord. Tragically and foolishly, many men blame their wives for their devotion to beverage alcohol or to other drugs. They may say, "She spent too much money on her new outfit, or on some furniture, or she nags all the time, or she is not the warm and loving wife I married." In some cases, these complaints may be legitimate, but they do not provide a basis for one's abusing alcohol and other drugs. We understand how a 5-year-old may try to excuse inexcusable behavior, but such conduct does not become a 40-year-old husband or a 40-year-old wife. Is there not a better way to resolve conflicts in marriage? Grown men and women should not act like little children. I remember reading about a case where a father was arrested and tried for sexually molesting his little 6-year-old girl. During the trial, the judge accepted the father's excuse that the little 6-year-old had acted seductively with her father. The father, his lawyer, and the judge all needed their heads examined. 6-year-olds have no idea what seduction means. They simply demonstrate affection for their fathers. Any judge who excuses a father's behavior in an incest case, regardless of the age of the son or the daughter involved, deserves to be convicted and sent to prison. The judge is just as guilty of evil as the father. One of the most inexplicable aspects of American society is how judges allow frivolous and ridiculous excuses to be used in courts of law. For example, one man blamed his murderous rampage on his addiction to Twinkies. Unfortunately, you heard me correctly. I said Twinkies. He claimed the sugar in the Twinkies had unbalanced his metabolism and caused him to kill the mayor of San Francisco and one of the councilmen of the same city. A judge who will allow such a foolish excuse does not deserve to sit on the bench in any courtroom in our nation. The judge ought to be brought to the court on charges of malfeasance. Because such absolutely stupid excuses are permitted in court, millions of Americans think our judicial system is out of kilter. Have you examined some of the excuses church members use for not attending church services? Many church members blame the weather for their negligence. I'm fully aware that some older people and some who are physically disabled are not making excuses. It would not be wise and could be very dangerous for them to get out on the highways in bad weather, especially at night. But for people who can go to work on Monday or attend a football game on Friday night, even when the weather is somewhat less than ideal, saying they cannot attend church services under the same conditions shows where their hearts are. And I ask you, what impression do such excuses have on the children in those families and on their unchristian neighbors? I sometimes hear church members complain that the preacher is too long-winded. He may speak an extra 10 or 15 minutes. If he has something to say and says it well, should we not appreciate one who is so dedicated to his work? And how many people leave a good baseball game if the game goes into extra innings? Do we complain when our favorite artist, country, popular, or otherwise, keeps on doing encores for an extra 20 or 30 minutes? I remember attending a Sigmund Romberg concert in Paducah, Kentucky in the late 1940s or early 1950s. The audience kept the artist on the stage for a long time after the concert was supposed to end. I did not hear any complaints. I certainly had none. Are baseball games or concerts more important than worshiping the God of heaven and listening to His Word? Some church members blame their busy schedules on their absence from worship services or from Bible studies. When I was in the sporting goods business in Dalton, Georgia, one of my customers said to me, "I go to church services regularly, but I would rather be fishing or hunting." He was a public school educator and was very busy in operating his school. He had little or no time to fish or to hunt. So he had rather been engaging in those activities than be at church services. But he did not allow his recreational activities to interfere with his duty to worship. Very few church members have the attitude of my customer in Georgia. They fish or hunt or play golf rather than worship on the Lord's Day, and apparently feel no guilt in doing so. I had another man to tell me the opposite of what the Georgia schoolman said. I mentioned that he was absent from Bible study the preceding Wednesday night. He did not hesitate nor seem embarrassed when he said, "The World Series was on television. I had to stay at home and watch the ball game." In my 59 years of preaching, that was my first experience of a man saying he stayed home to watch a ball game. I'm sure many members have gone to ball games and other forms of entertainment when they should have been at Bible study, but I cannot recall anyone's telling me that before. But honesty under those conditions does not excuse one's failure to do his duty. The Scriptures make it very plain that we will all have to stand on our own feet, figuratively speaking, when we have to give an account of our lives in the judgment. Paul told the Corinthians, "Wherefore we labor, that whether present or absent, we may be accepted of Him. For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that everyone may receive the things done in his body, according to that he has done, whether it be good or bad." 2 Corinthians 5, 9, and 10. Paul instructed the Philippians, "Let every man prove his own work, and then shall he have rejoicing in himself alone, and not in another. For every man shall bear his own burden." Galatians 6, 3, and 4. Are we grateful for what God has done for you and me through Jesus Christ our Lord? If we are grateful, how can we neglect the great salvation? How can we blame our faults and failures on others? When we fail in our personal lives, we must accept our failures and work with God's help to correct them. Do you remember the old Negro spiritual that taught, "Not my brother or my sister, but it's me, O Lord, standing in the need of prayer. Not my father or my mother, but it's me, O Lord, standing in the need of prayer." We all stand in the need of prayer, but we also stand in need of taking responsibility for our actions, all of our actions. Thank you for listening, and may God bless you.